Okay, and here we are on a Friday night. We're going to take a look at the current status of the coronavirus pandemic here in the U.S. with Dr. Henry Nyman, as we do each night. The number of stories continue to pour in. Some of them have a terrific edge to them. There are a lot of angry people out there on both sides of the ledger, so to speak. CDC is indicating that maybe as many as 10,000 young Americans have died since March with the lockdown practice and so forth that has caused psychological damage. I said that way back in the beginning. This is going to damage a whole generation of people. In fact, multiple generations, older people, younger people, didn't matter. This is something that was very well understood to be extremely difficult for people to deal with, and the results, now they're suggesting as many as 10,000 younger Americans largely committed suicide. All right, renowned EU scientists is now saying, we've heard this before, that the coronavirus, this particular version of it, was engineered in a Chinese lab, and an effective vaccine for it is very unlikely, and he explains why. This is a big EU, European Union scientist. A Sweden epidemiologist has said now that wearing face masks is very dangerous. You'll have to read the article to understand what he's saying. I've glanced through it. I haven't been able to read it thoroughly. He's talking about masks in groups, in close environments, and things of that nature. But there's a reason for the statement that it's worth a look. A machine learning model finds that coronavirus is growing now to be more infectious. We don't know if the machine understands the Italian version or not, but that's one story that came out today from physics.org. Pretty good site. So I posted that. World Health Organization chief hopes that coronavirus pandemic will end in under 2 more years. We don't think it's going to really end because the virus, we believe, is going to be around endemically. It's not going to vanish. It'll just reside into the scenery, so to speak, but it'll still be there each year and around the clock, apparently around the calendar. Let's see. 12 signs that you may have already had coronavirus and not known it. That's an interesting story out of Utah. And they want to take sex scenes out of motion pictures now and other things. Not that I care, but there's just a few of the stories that you can look at. Henry, it's a Friday night. It's been another strange week with the Democratic National Convention and all the rest of it. So how does it look to you tonight?
Well, it looks like the levels of virus has gotten pretty steady. The results from today were virtually identical to yesterday. There's a little over 1,000 deaths, about 1,100 deaths each day, and there's about 4,500 cases each day. I'm sorry, 45,000 cases each day. So the number of cases is down a little bit. Testing is down a fair amount in a few of the states. And there were some technical issues out in California. So it's unclear if these lower numbers are really lower numbers of cases, or they're just lower numbers of testing, and therefore they're not picking up as many. The leading states are still pretty much the same as far as deaths are concerned. The states that are on top are the same ones. Today, Texas had the most with 258. Florida had 118. California's got 106 so far. There might be another 30 or so. So they'll be well over 100. And then there's several states that had at least 50 deaths today. One is Louisiana with 50. Georgia had 94. Tennessee had 61. South Carolina had 58. So there's a bit of a pattern there. They're all in the South. And so that's where the top cases are as far as the deaths are concerned. And then the states with the higher numbers of cases is kind of similar to what has been in the past. The top three are the three that have been on top for a while now. It's California, Florida, and Texas. But there's other ones that are coming up that Illinois reported over 2,000 cases today. Georgia was almost 3,000 cases today. North Carolina had 2,000 cases today. And then quite a few additional ones had at least 1,000 cases today. So the situation is still on the high side, not quite as high as it's been, but it's really kind of setting things up for a very difficult fall. Washington State just came out with their projection, and their projection on deaths now is that by December 1st, they're projecting 310,000 dead in the U.S. So right now there's about 175,000. So that means there would be
another. That's a phenomenal jump. That's a huge jump. You weren't pitching.
Right.
Your projection wasn't that high.
Well, I didn't go out quite that far. I mean, I was saying that it would be getting up to 200,000 within a month, and so there's a big difference between the end of September and the end of November, essentially. I mean, they're said December 1st. So an extra 2 months. The issue really is going to be how bad it gets in the fall once flu season hits, once the new cases and spread due to Labor Day as well as school openings will start hitting by then. And I think December 1st was just, they didn't want to go out too far. They're not saying the pandemic's going to end December 1st and there's going to be 310,000 dead. Right. They're saying that there's going to be 310,000 dead right in the right in the heart of the, or actually getting towards the heart. I mean, flu season usually doesn't peak until January, February. And so
we guys are talking about December 1st. We have flu fatalities on average, 35 to what, 45, 50,000 on average?
Yeah, that would be a high flu season. That sometimes it's as low as 10 or 20,000. So a bad flu season will get up closer to the numbers you said. 50,000 deaths is a bad flu season. I mean, it gets up that high. It's not that it never happened or it rarely happens, but it's 50,000 is really on the high side. A more typical flu season would be 20,000 or so. And it may be lower because, I mentioned this before, but that essentially there's a lot of the immune response is kind of, something like interferon. Interferon was discovered because it basically targets viruses in general. I think it might be RNA viruses, but it targets RNA viruses. And so if you've got a pandemic, you're basically eliciting these cytokines that go after that virus, and they can impede other viruses from spreading. So you can have a situation, which is what happened with the swine flu. With swine flu, it not only knocked out H1N1 seasonal flu, but in 2009, it knocked out H3N2 also. So the only influenza A that was circulating in the fall of 2009 was the swine flu. And so you could see a similar effect. I haven't really followed how much flu there is in the southern hemisphere right now. But what's striking and what should strike, generate some serious concerns for the United States is that if you look at the top 10 countries for the number of cases that they have, and then if you look at which ones have the highest number of cases per million population. So if you adjust for the number of people in that country, even in the top 20, number one is actually Chile. So they have 20,000 cases. Number two is the U.S. with 17,400. And number three is Peru with 17,100. And number four is Brazil with 16,000. And those countries are quite a bit above. I mean, after that, it goes down to South Africa at 10,000, which is quite a bit lower than 16,000. So the top five are all between 16 and 20,000. And other than the U.S., which is, you know, the poster child for utter failure in a program to control the virus. All the other countries are in South America, so they're it's flu season for them right now. So they've had their winter during our summer, and they really haven't done very well. I mean, it's Brazil, Peru, and Chile are up there in the same level as the U.S. as far as the number of cases per 1 million population, and so they kind of got infected on the later side. I mean, they were just getting started in February, March or so. So U.S. had a little bit of a lead on them. And they rose to the levels they're at kind of in their winter. So when they got started, they were just entering the flu season, whereas the U.S. was able to get this high number of cases outside of the flu season. I mean, the U.S. kind of got started in February, March, where the flu season is starting to wind down by the time you get to March. And by April, it's just about gone. So by April, the only thing that was, you know, causing all the problems in the hospitals wasn't the flu. It was the COVID. And so the U.S. is essentially entering the flu season at this very high level, where they've had 17,000 cases per million, which is the second highest, just behind Chile. So the numbers are going to go up. The virus spreads more efficiently in the winter, because, as I said before, the virus doesn't do that well in sunlight, and in the winter there's less sunlight. The angle of the sun is also shallower, so there's not as much radiation that's hitting the virus to inactivate it. So the angle of the sun and the amount of sun that's actually present during the day, the days are shorter, allows the virus to last longer on surfaces, and and then people go inside, and so they, when it's cold, they're spending more time inside, and it makes it easier for the virus to transmit. So that's probably part of the reason that this projection is to have 300,000 dead by December 1st. And, you know, those numbers are not going to start going down from the change in season until, like, March or April, you know, because then the days start to get a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it starts to get a little bit warmer. You go outside more. So the heart of the season is likely to be between October and February or March, and
right through the most tumultuous time in the last 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you take a look at it, you know, you can get. I mean, if indeed it hits 300,000 deaths by December 1st, you know, the U.S. could easily be at 500,000 dead by February. And, you know, this would kind of start rivaling the 1918 pandemic, at least in the number of cases. The percent, of course, is lower because the population is bigger today than it was 100 years ago. But it could be among it'll certainly be the second most deadliest pandemic, but it would have a shot at becoming the most deadliest pandemic in the U.S. And
well, if it runs another 2 years,
recorded
Henry,
history.
If it runs another two
right,
years.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, with the 1918 pandemic, you know, contrary to what Trump says, it started in 1918. It didn't start in 1917, and it was relatively mild in the spring. So most of the casualties from the 1918 pandemic were in the fall of 1918. And then the spring of 1919, and then the fall of 1919. So there were kind of like three larger waves, and there was the initial Herald wave, which didn't cause that many fatalities. So most of the damage from that pandemic was really the fall of the first year, and we haven't gotten to the fall of the first year yet. So the fact that we'll be at 200,000 dead before it really gets to the first big wave is an indication that, you know, 500,000 is just kind of a number to pick out. It's not necessarily going to be the number that it ends up at. Now, you know, there could be some benefit from a vaccine. There could be some antivirals, and it's conceivable that you know, next year, even though the pandemic is here, it may be more controllable and may be able to reduce the fatality rate. But those things are you know, unclear. All those are clinical trials. It's not clear how well a vaccine will work. It's not clear how quickly the virus can evolve away from a vaccine if it does work. And similarly, it's not clear how well the antivirals will work or how quickly the virus can evolve away from that. I mean, the coronaviruses, it's well known that they recombine and they can evolve fairly quickly. And so stopgaps may not work very well.
I'm thinking that already, yeah.
And then, you know, other updates, more and more colleges are running into problems right here in Pittsburgh. University of Pittsburgh shut down classes on site for a couple of weeks. They started doing some testing. They announced results from limited testing. It was like, it was running at maybe 1% or so. It's not clear exactly who they were testing, whether these were symptomatic people or if they were just screening people. But those results first appeared a couple of days ago. And then today they said they're going to basically suspend the on-site teaching for at least a couple of weeks. The same thing is true for Notre Dame. I believe that Michigan State is doing that. There's some issues at Temple here. I think there's colleges in 15 states that are reporting cases that are somewhat concerning. That's pretty much as I said previously, that they're essentially going to let the students go to class, get infected, and then send them home. And so that's, you know, a formula for significant spread. And unfortunately, I would suspect that the high schools and elementary schools will not even be as aggressive. They'll be more reluctant to shut down classes. Trump's already threatened to withhold funding, and they'll probably push this experiment a little bit longer, get even more students infected, and then finally give up and
I'm seeing a few stories. And this is all really quite a conundrum, because when testing is increased or decreased, and it's very difficult to say. The number of people in hospital is going down. Was it 1% per day at the last measure for a few days? There was a decrease in the number of people who have had to be hospitalized. Is there anything to suggest that the virus is beyond being obviously widespread, less virulent?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not even a hint of that. The virus goes in waves. It really has to do more with either A, how much immunity there is, or how careful people are. I mean, the virus can be controlled. The rest of the world has controlled it. It doesn't look like it's controllable in the U.S. because there's no policy in the U.S. There's no national
leadership.
Policy.
Nope.
There's little compliance. The whole pandemic has been politicized. It's, an exercise stupidity, actually. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, it's the fact that there's debates about the masks, that the masks are optional, that they're opening schools when they have literally thousands of cases every day, and then they're going to move them into schools and expect everything to be okay.
It's not going to work.
Today,
it's a disaster.
Trump just said today, let's open things up and get the football season going. So he's cheering.
Why doesn't he just tell the truth
today,
Henry? What he wants. It seems to me, if there's any logic or pragmatism to his brain at all, what he's trying to say is, we're going to do this like Sweden and just let the virus run through the society.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's trying to say, but he won't say it.
No, he doesn't think that far ahead. He's just thinking that he needs to open up the economy. He's got to get people back to normal and ignore the virus. He is ignoring the virus. I mean, he's not talking about the virus unless he comes up with a quack, treatment. But as far as the pandemic, he hasn't really done any updates lately. He's gotten rid of the scientists. He doesn't have any scientists. He's got the MyPillow guy who he's listening to. He's got this Scott Atlas who looks at MRIs. I mean, even Pence isn't saying anything. I think he said something about, oh, there hasn't been a second wave yet. Well, it's not the fall yet. I mean, he keeps saying something that's not predicted hasn't happened yet. And
right, clever. And what happened to his press secretary? What happened to his press secretary?
I never heard anything about her. No. But the problem is, I mean, if you go through it and just look at the history of it, and of the pandemic, I said this at the beginning. It was true then, it's true now, that Trump is really anti-science. So he's got, his buddies on the golf course, or he's got Fox News. That's where he gets his information on how he should handle this. And so he started out with, this was a hoax. It really wasn't a pandemic. The Democrats were making a big deal out of it. There really wasn't anything to it. Then it was kind of, well, it's kind of like the flu, you know how many people die in 10 years from swimming pool accidents, the car accidents. I mean, they're comparing infectious diseases to accidents.
Well, 10 years car accidents, I can tell you, it's 500,000 people.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're just putting these numbers out, which are stupid. They got to do them for 10 years because they're not big enough in 1 year. And all you got to do is look at excess deaths and see there's a spike in the entire country and all of the countries that have had, all of the states that have had these major outbreaks. You can just look at death certificates and see they spiked with the COVID. A lot of the states actually have two peaks. They had the peak in April, and then things kind of got under control and it went down and was getting close to the non-excess. It still was going to be a little bit high, but it wasn't going to get above the line that it has to get. About 10 or 20% above, and now it's going back up again. And so these excess deaths—you don't see excess deaths unless there's a severe pandemic. You can see them for the flu season if it's a bad flu season, and it lasts for 2 or 3 weeks, and the level is slightly above the line. In this case, the level is significantly above the line. Mm-hmm. And in some of these states, it's been going for 20 weeks. And there's no indication that it's getting down below baseline. Like I said, in the states that have the double peak, it never got down below the line for excess deaths. So there were excess deaths even when it dropped. And now it's going back up again. And we're going into the flu season, so it's going to continue going back up, and it's likely to be higher than it was in the spring because that's typically the way it happens. But the whole, the pandemic was politicized. Trump, had no national plan. He was basically telling the states they were on their own. He had them competing against each other. There were shortages of PPEs. There were potential shortages of ventilators. And then there was this whole thing, CDC says you should wear a mask, but it's optional, so I'm not going to wear it. So, I mean, there was no example given. There was an example. It was a bad behavior. And then, he relies on miracles. The virus is going to suddenly miraculously disappear. It was going to disappear in April. Then it was going to disappear when it got warmer. Then it was going to, then he kind of went and said, well, it didn't disappear in April. It didn't disappear when it was going to get warmer, but I said it was going to disappear, and it's going to disappear. It just hasn't done so yet. And he doesn't know the difference between a pandemic and an epidemic. Pandemics don't disappear. They may get down to a level where the excess deaths go away, and it just becomes endemic, and it's kind of like the flu where it comes back every season, and you have cases, but you don't have the number of cases, or certainly not the number of deaths that you're going to have in the first couple of years. So there's a miracle that is going to make the virus disappear. Then there's a miracle drug. He's got hydroxychloroquine that he's pushing, and you know, a lot of patients were treated. There wasn't a significant benefit. Then he comes up with these ad hoc arguments. Well, you know, maybe it works for the people that aren't that sick. Well, everything will work for the people that aren't that sick, because 80% of them recover without anything. So
do you think Trump has been infected?
Whatever you want to treat it with and say this worked.
Do you think he's been infected?
I thought he was infected a couple of months ago. But
yeah,
we talked about
that.
Right. And then he's got his own, you know, his new miracle drug with the MyPillow guy, and with Ben Carson pushing his oleander extract or
that,
whatever.
To me, is pretty damn crazy. But
right.
Nothing
right.
new.
And the only data they have on that is in vitro, which is just showing that they can treat the virus in a test tube, and they can...
Understood. Now, Biden is saying that he will shut the whole country down again if he's president and if scientists, unnamed, recommend it. He'll shut everything down.
Yeah.
Mandatory coast-to-coast face masks. That's what he has also said. I don't think the country, frankly, can stand being shut down again. I think if proper masks were available to the people and they were trained appropriately in common sense using of the masks, I think that would be plenty to turn this around, or at least make a dent in it. I don't think we need to shut things down again.
Up till now, common sense has been in a very short supply. So
that
I'm
in
not
science,
sure that
as far as the administration goes.
That's going to flip over. And I mean, Biden wouldn't take office until January.
That's right.
January
20th or something.
The situation is likely to be dire. I mean, if there's 300,000 dead by December 1st, by January, it could be 400,000 or 500,000 dead. It'll be in a situation where people will be ready to try anything. And in fact, the rest of the world might be tell the U.S. they have to do something. They're basically the reservoir of the world, and they have more cases. I mean, these cases in South America that have these high rates that are similar to the U.S., their flu season is ending now. So their numbers are probably going to start getting a little bit more under control. And so by January, the U.S. could very well be number one in the world by a very wide margin. And the rest of the world is just going to say, this is crazy. You guys have no control over the virus. This isn't Sweden. I mean, these comparisons to Sweden are just ridiculous. Sweden, they wore masks. They weren't mandated, but they had some common sense. They were healthier than the U.S. population. The U.S. is a total disaster, and they're going to go into the flu season at this very high level. Like I said, the numbers have gone down a little bit. So there's, you know, 45,000 cases a day instead of 65,000 cases a day. So it's a little bit off the peak. Some of that may be less testing, and so the actual number may not even be that much below what it was a couple of weeks ago. But either way, you know, even if it's not the testing, if it's gone down, it's just gone down a little bit. And all the schools are opening up. I mean, they've been open for a week or two in the South. These colleges that I mentioned are just opening up.
So we'll give the schools another couple of weeks in the South, Henry, and they should begin to shut down again, right? Another couple of weeks?
Yeah. Right. But that's how long it'll take to get the students infected. So when when they go home, they're going to continue spreading the virus.
Grandparents.
So, right.
Yep.
Right. Instead of spreading it in school, they're going to spread it in their homes. And then they're going to get a more vulnerable population. So they're not only going to get more people sick, but they're going to get people sick enough to go and fill up the ICUs, and there's going to be a whole issue about PPEs again. But what I'm saying is by January, the situation could be, you know, extremely dire, much worse than it was when the initial shutdown happened. And, you know, maybe more people will wear masks, but like I said, this has just been politicized. I mean, there's some people that still think that all these counts are exaggerated. It's over the top. There really isn't, you know, as much activity, and that's the same song was sung this afternoon when the Senate had their post office hearing, and so. I thought they were getting serious about it because the Senate was going to hold series meetings on the post office, and it turns out it's just to soften things up for the House committee. That this wasn't to basically say, well, we're concerned also. This was a meeting for the Republicans say, oh, it's all overblown. There's not a problem. There are a couple reports here and there. Things are under control. There won't be a delay. You can vote by mail. The post office can handle it. Everything's under control. And it was just nonsense. I mean, the Republicans are saying there's nothing to worry about. The Democrats are making a big deal out of this. There isn't going to be a problem. And then you said, well, you know, this new guy, he's only been there 60 days. And 60 days ago, the delays in delivering the mail took a dramatic increase. That they have even their own data shows a dramatic increase in the number of packages that were sent out late and had a delay. And had to say, oh, that was because that was because of the pandemic. People that were on a quarantine, they didn't have as many people. And the problem is the explanation didn't match the data because the pandemic's been around since February and March. This stuff didn't happen. This drop didn't happen in March or April or May. This drop happened in June. It happened precisely when this guy took office. So it's his procedures that led to the delays. And
that's inarguable, though. Don't even waste your breath.
And he's not changing anything.
No.
He took all of these orders offline. He's not putting them back online. He says that they're unnecessary. They asked if they cut back on overtime. He said no. The reports from the post office workers say yes, that essentially they had orders that the trucks normally, if there was mail coming in and the truck was getting loaded up, they would make sure that everything that came up went on the truck before it went out. He changed the policy. So the truck, the doors on the truck are sealed a half an hour before it's going to leave. And regardless of whether there's mail that has to be delivered, they just leave it in the post office. And then it piles up, and there's pictures of, you know, packages that have been sitting in the post office for 10 days. There's farmers that ordered chicks, you know, they're all dead. You know, they never delivered them. They stayed in the post office and they just got carcasses. They didn't get any poultry that they were supposed to be getting in the mail.
Disgusting.
There's food, disgusting. Food that's rotting. And this isn't because of COVID. This is because of this guy's new policies. And he isn't saying he's changing the policies. He isn't saying he's putting the sorters back online. He's saying, don't worry about it. It's not going to be a problem. This guy has no experience.
You know what his name is?
The post office.
His name is, do you know what his name is? His last name is DeJoy. D-E-J-O-Y.
He takes away
name.
All the joy. Right, right.
Yeah.
Dead joy is probably should be. So this is who is in charge. And he's going to say, yeah, it's fine. You can vote by mail. It's not going to be a problem. We can handle it. He can't handle what he hasn't come up with a plan to correct what he's already done. He's already created these backlogs. He's already created these problems with people that get medications through the mail. The medications aren't coming. Some are trying to ration their doses. They're ending up in the hospital because they're not really taking their medicine. They're only taking partial dose of the medicine because they're waiting for the refills. And this guy is a disaster. And he hasn't acknowledged he's a disaster. He's like Trump. Is everything somebody else's fault? Yeah. Oh, it's a problem because we've got COVID.
Well,
COVID,
no accountability. They're all victims. Remember, it's victimhood.
Right. So he's going to go and say, everything's okay. We're going to handle the ballots as if they're first class, even though a lot of them are here on bulk rate. We're going to get the mail delivered. And, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. This guy has created a disaster. He hasn't really said how
he acts like he doesn't give a damn either. He just doesn't care.
He's saying it's not. He does care. He wants to destroy the post office. He wants to privatize it. He does care. That's his job, is to put the post office out of government control. So, and then his second job is to do exactly what he was doing, which was to basically create chaos for the voting.
When I say he doesn't care, it's the responses to the questions he gives. He hasn't done anything wrong. He doesn't care. It's not a problem.
Right.
He's doing his job, as you said. He's doing precisely what he was put in there to do. So he didn't care.
So initially it sounded like he was going to be somewhat responsive because he had been asked for explanations. He was silent. He didn't say anything. They were trying to get documentations before Monday hearings. He couldn't promise anything on any of that. So this was just to deflect. This was designed to say, oh, it's not a big problem. Things are under control. He's going to address it. He'll make this concession. He'll make that concession. After the meeting, now the Department of OMB, Office of Management and Budget, is talking about Trump vetoing the aid to the post office because this is an overreaction. There's not a problem. So, I mean, this is the pandemic rerun. You know, the pandemic isn't a problem, is being overblown. Now it's the post office isn't a problem, is being overblown. These guys have zero credibility. In fact, their credibility is so bad that whatever they say, it's really just the opposite. So if they're saying there's no problem at the post office, there's a big problem at the post office. And if they're saying the pandemic's not a problem, the pandemic's a problem. If they're saying the pandemic's going to disappear, the pandemic isn't going to disappear. They're very consistent. They give consistently bad information, and then they ignore the fact how bad it was and come up with something else they're going to give information on. So the post office issue is not going away, and there's got to be hearings.
No.
Monday.
Henry, we're tumbling out of control into absolute catastrophe. That's what's going on here. Planned catastrophe, okay? They're going to wreck everything rather than own up to anything.
Right. And then they're going to say it's all a hoax. And the election is fixed. And it really does not look good.
It looks terrible, for God's sakes.
Yeah. So that's the environment that we're going into flu season with the pandemic at 40 to 50,000 cases a day, 1,000 to 1,500 deaths per day, and there'll probably be a little bit of a lag on the deaths. The deaths will probably dip a little bit, and then they'll start heading up once the new wave hits due to school openings and attempts to get more normalized. And that's kind of what the latest numbers are pointing to. And there's not the realization yet that when you have this much virus floating around, it isn't something that's going to get better, especially if you keep easing restrictions, like trying to get everybody to go back to school and trying to go and get a
hell on. What did I say? Hell on wheels. That's what we have to look forward to. Seriously, this is going to be a catastrophe. You better stock up on food, friends. I'm not joking. I've said it a million times. Look, this thing could get so bad that a lot of trucks stop running. There could be any number of unforeseen or foreseen problems. You better prepare. You still have a little bit of time, but every day is precious.
Yeah, well, once you get into October, November, that's when things are going to start going downhill real quickly because it's going to be colder. People are going to be spending more time inside. The virus will get a boost from these attempts to open up the schools. By then, the schools will be shut down, but they'll have online classes, but the on-site will be pretty much closed down, and the students will be back in the home, but they'll bring the virus with them. And so there's going to be another wave of seriously ill people going to hospitals, and it's going to be a rerun of the spring, except at a higher level. And I doubt that Trump is prepared for the higher level. I mean,
he's not prepared for anything, Henry. What the hell is he prepared for?
Pence keeps on saying there's no second wave, and he hasn't figured out that the second wave happens in the fall, and it's not fall yet. I mean, it happens in the fall during the the flu season. It was, in 1918, it was when the war ended, and there were parades, and that was in November. And so talking in July and August about no second wave, when the wave isn't going to happen until October, November, is just, more nonsense.
I agree.
So anyway,
yeah, there it
let's
is.
Let's see what happens over the weekend and next week. Next week, the schools will report a lot of problems, and they'll start closing down very quickly in the next few weeks. And we'll see what happens. So
all right,
that's kind of where we stand for now.
Good summary, Henry. Very good. All right, have a good weekend.
Okay.
Take care.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks. All right, that's it for tonight. You all take care, and you do, if you haven't prepared, you still have a little bit of time. Head out to Costco. They seem to have the best prices on bulk foods that are freeze-dried and so forth. But don't delay any further. It's time. Okay, talk soon. Be well.